Once upon a time, archaeology in our part of the West meant digging up stuff people left behind long ago and taking it away. The values in archaeology have changed a bit over time, especially in regards to artifacts from Native American societies. Our monthly visit with the folks from SULA, the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, is called Underground History, and this month we go underground metaphorically at Oregon's Grand Ronde Reservation. Mark Tveskov from SULA is our guide once again. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
So where'd you take us this month?
Well, we're going to go visit the Grand Ronde Reservation and some really innovative archaeology that they're doing up there. And like you said, the values in archaeology are really changing. I mean, the model of the swashbuckling Indiana Jones doesn't really resonate in today's archaeological world, and I think today's guests really exemplify that.
And our guests are Sarah Gonzalez, archaeology professor at the University of Washington with Field Methods in Indigenous Archaeology, which you'll hear to be called FMIA. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, good morning.
Good to have you here. Brees Edwards is with us as well. He is with the Tribal Historic Preservation Office, or TIPO, at the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, where he is the principal archaeologist. Hi, Brees.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good to have you both here today. Sarah, give us a sense of what you went looking for on the reservation.
Well, I initially started working here at University of Washington now about 3.5 years ago, and I had formed a relationship with Brees and David Harrelson there at the Tribal Historic Preservation Office, and they invited me down for an afternoon meeting to talk about different kinds of projects they had. And we went and we visited the site of the Grand Ronde Schoolhouse, which was in operation from about 1856 until 1955, when the tribe was initially terminated. And we walked around the property and we discussed the potential of using archaeology to recover histories of education and schooling there on the Grand Ronde Reservation.
And Brees, I mean, is the history not very complete about what happened to the schoolhouse, or is this something that the tribe would like to put behind it?
It's the role of education had a prominent position in the development of the reservation from the very beginning, and it's not a simple story. It's not a simple line of understanding, and archaeology was an avenue for bringing a different lens to a sensitive topic.
So Sarah Gonzalez, there's a name and an acronym, FMIA, Field Methods in Indigenous Archaeology. Talk about the process and any differences between archaeology as is usually done and this way.
Well, as Mark talked about, you know, to do archaeology in the 21st century means that you have to collaborate with local and descendant communities, especially tribes. It's a key aspect of any archaeological practice here, especially if you're working professionally. But unfortunately, there's few opportunities for students to participate in collaboration or working directly with Native American tribes. And so in talking about how we wanted to proceed at the schoolhouse, it was really important for me, as well as for the TIPO, to think about how we could involve students at the outset so that we were offering kind of training to the next generation of archaeologists so that they understand what it means to work with and for a tribe.
So a collaborator, I mean, you're actually working with people who have some stake. I mean, it's their ancestors you're digging this stuff from.
Exactly. You know, it's really important that, you know, students from the outset, before they even, you know, consider to go into the field of archaeology or before they get a job, that they understand, you know, what tribal history is, what archaeology is, how it matters to a tribe, and then how doing archaeology with a tribe might be different than doing archaeology, say, you know, outside of North America or within a cultural resource management context.
And Brees Edwards, was there any excavation or exploration of the schoolhouse site before the UW people started doing this?
We had recorded the structure itself as it stood at the moment. We had done some preliminary ground penetrating radar studies on the property as non-intrusive baseline starts to understand where might we want to look, what sort of maintenance of the land has there been on this property, you know, is there a lot of disturbance that or not, and what we found was that minimally disturbed for at least a century, and that's a good thing.
Let's pause for a moment, Brees, and tell people the significance of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, because this is much bigger than the place occupied by the tribe now.
Yes. So as the Confederation today is seven or more tribes and bands that ceded lands through treaty in the mid-1850s. And those treaties collectively span an area from southern Oregon to the north shore of the Columbia River, from the Cascades to the coastline, or to the coast range, sorry. And that's a big chunk of real estate. And so we find the Grand Ronde, as it was established as a reservation, just shy of 70,000 acres, brought all of those people together into a limited area. And the school was one of the first buildings that the agency was putting energy into. And so it's also one of the start points for understanding reservation and how government policies start to get enacted.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one of the things I find really fascinating, and we've been having some email exchanges with our colleague Ben Truey from the Southern Oregon Historical Society, who's been looking at some of the records from the Grand Ronde schools. And I find it fascinating how in the later 1800s, how different religious denominations were working with the federal government through things like education as a matter of government policy.
Mark Tveskov is our featured monthly guest with the Underground History segment here on the Jefferson Exchange from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, or SULA. We're talking about digs at the Grand Ronde Reservation in Northern Oregon, and with Sarah Gonzalez, who's an archaeology professor at the University of Washington, and Brees Edwards, who's the principal archaeologist for the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So the digs you have worked on, Mark, in Southern Oregon and on the Southern Oregon coast, I mean, eventually lead to the people who now are represented by the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde.
That's right. One of the main features of our research has been on the Rogue River wars, and many of the people that fought in those wars on the indigenous side ended up at either the Grand Ronde or Siletz Reservation, where they became the people that are their children were attending the school that Sarah and Brees are working on.
And Sarah, tell us again when the school was established. Was it the 1850s?
Well, there's a little bit of confusion about that because of the records. So it looks to be that the school was kind of established at the same time as the reservation was established. So the earliest record that we have right now is about 1856. Mm-hmm. And it was in operation, like I said, until about 1955 when the tribe had its rights terminated.
And Brees, when were the rights restored? I mean, this is a story for so many tribes in the West that they were terminated in the 50s and got cash payouts and all that sort of thing, and then had to go back through a restoration process, often in the 80s. When was it for the Grand Ronde?
83, and then with the Reservation Act several years later.
What is the history of occupation of that land? I mean, I wonder if in digging for things that have been left there since the 1850s, if there might be some things that predate that occupy occupation before colonization.
Yes, we do have early, what archaeologists would refer to as pre-contact material. We have fields in the area that, you know, continually have farmers bringing in materials for, you know, to include into the tribe's collection. What's interesting about where we're at is we're right at the extent of the maximum rats in Missoula inundation. So that in many ways kind of caps a large portion of the land area that we're at. And kind of starts to give us a baseline of, you know, 14,500 years ago, kind of clearing the slate, as it were, and then, you know, with population being displaced up as a result of this event.
Could you tell us about that event?
So we're kind of sidetracking or, you know, stepping aside, but in terms of the history here, the Willamette Valley goes through a series of inundations of the Bretts, or also known as the Missoula Floods. And the Grand Ronde Valley is one of these armatures off of that inundation. And the kind of the last events are about 14,500 years ago.
All right, so everything that you can find is pretty much above that level and since that time.
Yes.
All right. Sarah Gonzalez, tell us, who are the people who do the work in the Summer Field School?
Well, there's undergraduate and graduate students who range from students here at the University of Washington to Brown University, San Francisco State, Western Oregon, Pacific Lutheran, and Portland State. So we have a large crew of undergraduates from several different institutions that come and join us for living and working with the TIPO on the Grand Ronde Reservation, and now for the past two summers.
How big a crew altogether?
Each summer we've had between 10 and 12 students participate, and in addition to the students that are participating, we've also had several tribal members, enrolled tribal members also participate in the field school.
It looks like there's a very careful approach. I mean, I was looking at some videos that are offered through the website and the Facebook page for FMIA, and it looks like you're taking advantage of modern technology like drones, for example.
Oh, yeah, that's a popular item that we've just added to essentially our archaeology toolkit. You know, it's really important for us in thinking about how to do archaeology in a Grand Ronde Ray of understanding how we can use those kinds of low-impact tools to maximize the information we can gather about, you know, what lies beneath the ground so that we minimize harm to cultural resources and, more importantly, harm to the contemporary community. Because all of these resources that we're working with are defined as being very important and sacred to the Grand Ronde tribe. And it's important to us that any kind of investigations that we're doing attempt to minimize any harm that's represented by the archaeology tools that we're going to be using on the ground.
So, Brees Edwards, when digging does finally take place, I mean, what is done with anything found?
It's recovered. We also are doing soil samples, so we're taking samples of the dirt that is being examined. And it goes back and is processed by Sarah and her team. But with the understanding that all of those items are going to come back, and this is one of the great elements that Sarah has brought to this, is an approach and of what's collected is returned to where it was found. So, the rigidity of excavation, with all of our recording as a profession, we can also put all of those items that are removed from the soil, we can also put them back to where they came from.
And when you say put them back to where they came from, you mean put them back in the holes from which you dug them out of in the first place?
Yes.
Or no?
Yes. No, that is the what we're after.
All right, and Sarah, this is considered a catch-and-release kind of archaeology?
Yeah, well, we've used catch-and-release archaeology to talk about a specific method that we use in archaeology for surface collection. So oftentimes when you first come to a site, you'll collect artifacts from the surface to kind of get an idea of how large the site is and what kinds of activities took place across it. But in Oregon and in Washington and in California, where I previously worked, we don't have really good we can't really see the ground very well. And so we've developed this method of kind of peeling back the sod layers and collecting artifacts from within that 8 to 10 centimeter sod layer, so about five inches or so. And so what we've been doing at Grand Ronde is we've been using that surface collection method, peeling back the sod, looking for artifacts, fully documenting them, you know, photographing them, cataloging them in the lab, digitizing all of the photographs and records that we have associated with them so that we can then return those back into their original, what we call, surface collection unit.
One of the things that we've saw from your pictures, and we use this as a picture on our website, is a hair clip. And any idea when it was from, and is that one of the more exciting finds?
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. And, of course, as with most archaeology, the most exciting finds happen the day or the day before you have to fill everything back in.
Right.
So the hair clip was found right at the top of the privy that was associated with the schoolhouse. It was one of several exciting finds that we recovered that day. So we have that. It was actually a pair of hair barrettes, some child suspenders. I think we have over 60 tiny stubs of pencils, little Ticonderoga. That we've recovered, as well as two pairs of children's scissors.
Wow. And left-handed or right-handed?
I think they were right-handed, but it's hard to tell. They're still encased in some corrosion.
Brees Edwards, through the process, do you know some stories about the tribes that you didn't know before?
I'm sorry?
Because of this process, do you know some stories that you didn't previously know?
We're able to start bringing in stories from community and start fleshing those stories out a little bit more. We've, as Sarah mentioned, the pencils. There's something about seeing a one-inch pencil stub that's been worked all the way to its last possible size that's still manageable to hold on to, and then hear an elder talk about doing their homework, and you've got a much different image now that comes to mind of what that was.
Truly. Sarah Gonzalez, will the field school be back in summer 2017?
Yeah, we're going to be running the next season of FMIA this summer, and we are going to be in the process of advertising for additional students to come and join us at Grand Ron.
All right. FMIA is Field Methods in Indigenous Archaeology, led by Sarah Gonzalez, an archaeology professor at the University of Washington. You also heard from Brees Edwards, the principal archaeologist at the Tribal Historic Preservation Office, the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ron, and of course, Mark Tveskov here every month with Underground History. Chelsea Rose out of town this month. Mark, always good to see you.
Great to be here.
Thank you all for joining us.